Sports Joe presents House of Rugby, together with Heineken. Get the facts, be drink aware. Visit drinkaware.ie.
Hello and you're all very welcome to House of Rugby with thanks to Heineken. My name is Mairtha Rasnighul and I'm delighted to be joined on this week's show by former Ireland internationals Lindsay Peat and Alison Miller to reflect on the 2023 Rugby World Cup and to look back on the clash of the Titans, where the two most successful teams in Rugby World Cup history went head to head on Saturday night, and of course the Springboks reigned victorious. Alison, Lindsay, how are we doing?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, I'm good.
Thanks for having
us. Can you believe it's all over?
Yeah, in a way, I'm kind of tired after now. I'm glad it's over. I need a break. But yeah, look, it wasn't a brilliant final in one sense, but it was brilliant in one sense because it was so close. So, and I don't know why, but I didn't know who I was going to shout for or be up for. And I think about after 10 minutes, I found myself cheering on South Africa. Don't know why, but that's what I went with. So, yeah, look, controversial in ways and close and different things like that. But yeah, sure, look, it's over now. Yeah. We'll all get a break.
We'll go on to our awards of the tournament a little later on. But that game, it was ferocious. It was frantic. It was enthralling. It wasn't a classic, but it was in other ways. Mm. And South Africa, as they usually do, they edged it out and found a way.
Oh, to be honest, I thought it was an exciting final from the point of a spectator, like anyone who's probably not,
I loved it.
Yeah, I have to say I enjoyed it from the fact that it had everything. Like, it had drama, it had red cards, it had yellow cards, it had turnovers. I really thought New Zealand were going to pip it at the end. They were the only team to score a try. They were exceptional for the fact that they lost. They were down 14 men with still 50 minutes to play. So I thought it had everything. You know, Peter Steph Du Toit,
we
finally found him coming to the form that he's better known for. He 28 tackles, the amount of them that were dominant. You could actually, I don't know if you've picked it up on the camera, but you could actually hear, you know, when you just like, ouch, when you could feel that tackle, you just hear this.
I don't think he probably carried about two or three balls, but he tackled, and like that, they were just brilliant, dominant tackles. He was unbelievable, like unbelievable. And it just goes to show, like, you know, use your strengths in a game. He didn't carry much. Other guys were there to do it, but he defensively just set the tone for South Africa. I never felt so sorry for someone like Ches and Kobe. I couldn't watch him for the 10 minutes where he was sitting on the, and he wasn't looking. I don't know, but I get the impression he's a real humble guy. I'd love to see South Africa giving him the ball more. Like, wasn't it really a game for wingers, but yeah, like Lindsay said, it was a classic game in terms of spectator. I thought New Zealand would win it. I put them down as favourites going in, and even with 14 men, they look dangerous, and that's their ability to do that. So, like, we could be here sitting talking about a different result, you know, little margins, fine margins, different calls, decisions, and but look, they got the calls, and you know, that's the way it goes.
They play to their strengths, and you mentioned that there. And I suppose going into the game, there was a lot of talk again about the 7-1 split. A lot of us maybe didn't think they'd go down that route again because it didn't work in their favour when they came up against Ireland. But they did. They backed their strengths. I suppose they looked at the weather as well. They knew what would win them that game. Would they have won had they not gone with the 7-1 split?
I think they'd find a way. Like, I am fascinated by them. Like, I thought, right, there was a couple of things didn't go for New Zealand. Like, so I thought Beauden Barrett, like, probably had the worst game we'd probably seen from him in a long time. He was a key. Will Jordan was exceptional and could have actually had the chance to beat the record number of tries within a tournament and eradicate John Loma, who's held it for so long now. And those are two guys who, for me, who were standout, who actually underperformed and really was key to...
Like, you don't often see Will Jordan be taken off, do you?
No, you do not.
In a game where it's still on the line, like, it's not... You know.
But you're like, we mentioned Ches and Colby there, right? And the fact that that guy actually didn't deserve, in the sense of a yellow card, for how much he actually just stays in the game. Because it's very hard, as you know, as a winger to not be involved in the play. But then when you're called upon to actually make your tackle, he picks up Will Jordan, he spills him. Oh, yeah. And then Quagga Smith just, like, absolutely rips the ball. So... What fascinated me is South Africa just took their moments to disrupt New Zealand. So they didn't just do it consistently. So we had Etzebeth, who were disruptive in the line-out. You had Faf de Klerk, who had no right to have a tap tackle. Again, I think it was on Will Jordan. And I'm like, they're just living on moments that disrupt them, mm-hmm. that then get into the psyche of New Zealand. And it's just disrupting a flow. And when you're disrupted of a flow, which we know we went into 2017 with such a flow from a Six Nations, we just didn't start well. And you just are then impacted. So I just think I'm fascinated by South Africa, who were like, their captain's only back after 9 months, has ACL. Peter Seftetoy, who we've mentioned, has had two reconstructive surgeries on both knees. He really shouldn't be probably still playing. And they just find a way. So the 7-1 split, or if they had it on 6-2,
they lose their upper after 3 minutes, about to say
that. Faf de Klerk is down having cramp. And I'm like, this lad want to get up because someone's going to have to play nine. But do you know what? If you had asked anybody to play nine,
well, they, I think Ches and Kobe was,
yeah, was the sub nine, yeah.
But they would have. But then it, was it going to be a time where he's in the sim bin? So, yeah, like, I mean, anything that could have went wrong. But I would, I really think we talk about resilience.
And their road to the final wasn't like they scraped in, like, you know, yeah, 1 point wasn't
beaten
1 point
by Ireland,
by
1 point
by
France,
1 point by England,
they edged
1 point win. I don't know. It's just interesting about teams and the difference between teams that win and teams that lose. And there's not. There's no difference between ability, and it's just the finding a way. It's finding a way, you know, when you're under pressure, you need to win, you got to do what it takes. Every little moment, every little thing, as Lindsay said, all the different moments adding up to get your win. And I think that comes from, like, Razzie gets a lot of stick, and sometimes I think he probably sways on being a genius and maybe making a mad call. I don't know. I'd love to kind of get inside that braid of his. But I don't even think the 7-1 split had a massive impact on the final. Like, I don't think, you know, the bomb squad came on and closed out the game. Like, they didn't, compared to other games, I don't think they came in and made a massive impact.
But they still did something, whether it was a turnover at the breakdown, whether it was a forced turnover in possession for New Zealand. And this is what I mean. If you add up all the disruptive points of note that we've just even mentioned there, imagine having to reset and you think you're on your way down the wing and you get tap tackled and you're like, Jesus Christ, I'm not getting a moment here. You think you're one on one with Chelsea and Colby, you're twice the size, and you're like, oh, I'm going to go over this man. But then not only that, to get tackled to retain the ball is one thing, but to get tackled and the ball ripped from you, just like every time you thought they were dead and buried,
they
like resurrect
or whatever it is.
And I think that the fact that Razzie doesn't give an absolute flying absolutely impacts his team, that they're just so in such a safe space to just make mistakes, do what they try, attack what they see in front of them, and they just believe in themselves. And I just feel I'd love to bottle it, to be honest. I would love to, like, take it from their body and bottle it and give it to some, because it's just a fascinating side of the game.
It's the way New Zealand used to be probably before this cycle. And, like, of course, New Zealand were coming in and everyone's like, oh yeah, we want to get New Zealand, blah blah blah, and they weren't showing much form and stuff. But that would have been New Zealand of 2015, 2011. Just, you could be losing against them, they'll find a way the last 10 minutes. Yeah. They're like the Kilkenny Hurlers at the best. Like, you know, you think you're beating them and they just come back.
It just feels like this South Africa team, they don't know how to lose.
Yeah. And
it's like
won.
Something out of Halloween, you know, you think the bad guy is dead and they're just like resurrect. They're like, what do I have to do here to get rid
and
of
like
you?
Someone like Ches and Kobe, he's so small, like, he's brilliant in the air. Like, people are like, put the balls on top of him, but I'm like, he has this kind of elasticity in his legs to get up against those big guys and claim those balls. Like,
but
he's,
I tell
brilliant.
You who else was excellent was Willemse.
Oh, he's brilliant. He's a brilliant
fullback
player.
And that's his favourite piece. I know they tried him at out half, but I think he was absolutely exceptional in the air on a night where it was really wet and it was crappy and a wet ball, you would forgive him. And where there, that's what I mean, you would expect the safe hands of Bowden Barrett, and he's like turning over a ball, wow. So I just think,
what was it, the pressure, the occasion that got to New Zealand, or was it simply down to the pressure that South Africa put them under?
No, I think it's like, I mean, minuscule margins. And that's the thing about finals with two teams, like we've talked about the Kilkenny Hurlers, you could talk about in any sport, it's very small margins. Like, Ardie Savea, really, on the tournament he had, I thought he's been exceptional over the last probably 12, 18, 24 months. What a player. Didn't deserve to be on the losing side. He did everything he could. Even that breakdown the wing, I can't remember who came on, was just on, and he turned over the ball with a turnover. Yeah. He wasn't under pressure. And there are moments where you're like, that wouldn't happen. If that was 9 times out of 10 that you would play that, it just wouldn't happen. So it's just small margins where you ride your luck. You know, the universe is dictating maybe a couple of things.
Yeah, like, if you look back at all other World Cup finals, like, was it 2011? New Zealand got a penalty to win, wasn't it? Now, am I being right? Can we remember back to 2000? I think it was, yes. And they won the final. Like, you get these things. We know this in your sporting careers. You think back at times where you're like, you got the rub of the green in terms of decisions with referees, and you got them. And then other days you didn't get them. And that can be the difference between, you know. And like, that's going to be the case unless we get AI to ref our games. There's always going to be that small, you know, interpretation, and, you know, fans go mad and go, but like, we've got human beings refereeing, and sometimes you'll get the luck, other times, I don't even say it's luck, but it's just...
Did you think he was that bad? I actually think by way of
I thought he was good.
Standards,
I thought he was good.
Normally he is pedantic.
I thought he was good now, to be honest. And but it's interesting now, I'm not sure on this, but I think New Zealand had the most, I could be wrong, yellow and red cards in a tournament. Now that's a stat we need to check, but I think, and then you're coming to a final and they get like 3 minutes in, you know,
the yellow card and the red. The red card, you really felt Sam Kane, but was it the right decision?
I think so. 100%. He didn't make any attempt to dip, and I think World Rugby will need to look at this. It's very hard to referee because it is something that has to be black or white, but then there is mitigating factors, and I think Khaleesi just got away with the Ardie Sevilla because he did dip.
Yeah, he actually
was on the wrong
see him
side.
Bending and hit, like, you know, but I really think, like, you know, as a professional, you're going to have to be a little bit safer. You're going to have to give up maybe a yard or two and actually make the tackle rather than, you know, like flying in. And I think credit to South Africa, they've shown good discipline in terms of that area. Like, even South Africa, Ireland, that was a humdinger of a game, and both sides, you know, really disciplined in that terms. Yeah. So, like, I don't know, like, it's hard because I look back at when I was playing and I go, God, nowadays I could be off. Well, you know what we all just did.
Well, I'm a devil for standing up straight, and I've started to, I suppose, if you know you're going to maybe, like, you don't have time to dip, like, and I... Sam Kane could have just even, like, maybe even just been a blockade.
Well, what I don't understand about that is where it is on the pitch. There's absolutely no threat. They're not going to score. What they were actually going to do, Jesse Creel carries, probably going to be
an
a
exit
ruck,
kick.
An exit. Yeah. Like, so... He's getting the ball back. So, like, you look there and you're like, okay, you're not on your line. You're not about to concede a try. It was just so pointless. This is what I... struggle, you're a professional, you're in a World Cup final, you don't have to risk that there. Like,
and
not at all.
What about the penalty that was given against Ardie Sevilla, and Wayne Barnes admitted that it was an error on his part, that it was the wrong decision? Do you think that had an impact on the game, or does it balance out with other decisions that were made throughout the game?
I think he's very unlucky on that one. You see the quick release, I actually on the first viewing of it thought that he got it right, because what happens is you can watch Ardie Sevilla as the tackle assist, so he's pulling him down, but it's not until second viewing until you see this quick release.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So he actually does give a quick release. It's like split second and then he's back on the ball. So I thought he was very unlucky. I think you're kind of clutching at straws.
I think it probably
because again, if you look where he is on the pitch, it's not like it's like in the opposition 22. He was in his own 22. Yeah. So again, it just would have been an exit to get them up the pitch. So it's not right, maybe down the line phases to a score, but it's just territorially getting them up the pitch. It's not like it was, you know, life or death there in that moment.
I think it always balances out. I think if you look back at that game, you go, for like South Africa could have got penalties or, you know, whatever it is. I think it generally
balances
out.
And even if they hadn't gotten that kick, there's nothing to say that South Africa wouldn't have still gone on
and
won
the game.
There's
no point. People look at a game, oh, what if this happened? And then, you know, whatever, New Zealand get a penalty. You can't look back at a game because things will happen in reaction to that then. So like, if, for example, I win a penalty and then we score, and like, you can't say we would have won by 3 points because we don't know what's going to happen, you know, reactionary to that. So the other team go because they're like, okay, now suddenly we're not in the ascendancy. So like, you like, the game doesn't work like that. You don't go, oh, that moment in that game, we got the 3 points, we would have won 3 points. Yeah. No, you don't know how the other team's going to react to that and how... You know how it, and I think it's been very basic to look back at a game and go, that was the selling, that was the point.
Yeah.
It doesn't work like that. A team will react to what happens.
And despite the cards, New Zealand had a chance to win that game. They had 70% possession in the second half. They showed great character and they could have won.
Oh, I still thought down to the last second, I was like, they're going to do something.
Mm-hmm. So we're talking about the Ardie Sevilla turnover. We're talking about the cards, which I don't think actually if anything, probably galvanised New Zealand.
Yeah, they started playing better after the four, when they got down to 14.
So I actually thought that did them a favour.
It's like they woke up.
Yeah. So Ardie Sevilla with that, as I said, that moment on the wing, the Will Jordan turnover, the tap tackle on him. There were moments where New Zealand were poor in possession, the high ball that they turned over. So you're masters of your own downfall or you're masters of your own success. So the other bit is I'm texting Junior during the match and, like, you know, I felt like actually South Africa could have been probably... Jesus, up to 21 points if they wanted, because they were in the opposition 5 metre for so long. They were in the ascendancy and then they decided to take 3 points and I'm like, Jesus Christ, if I was captain, I'd be like, go to the corner, we're going to maul them over. Yeah. Junior's like, well, no, they kind of dealt with their maul. I said, yeah, but they sucked them in and they would have got them out in the wing. So this is the difference with decisions. They went for the safe 3 points and built it up that way to make sure that every time they went to the opposition 22, they visited there, they came away with a score. And that's a really good way to look at it. I'm kind of rootless. I'm like, nah.
And I suppose that's knockout rugby. And Felix Jones was saying after the match that South Africa always make a plan and find a way, that it's that simple. That's their attitude. And Andre Pollard's boot gave them enough of a buffer in the first half. They didn't need to score in the second half. And in the last two World Cup finals, they've scored 2 tries, both of them coming in 2019. So it makes no difference to them that they're not scoring tries.
They don't care.
They don't care.
I wouldn't care.
It's not about rugby. And maybe there are lessons to be learned there. Take your points. Grind it out.
And, like, it's always easy to say... when a team goes for it and kicks to the corner and then get turned over and people are like, why didn't they?
Yes,
why didn't they kick? It's all in that moment as how you're feeling, as well as...
Well, that's why Junior was captain, I was. I'd be like, Mom.
You'd be tap and go, I can see you.
I suppose... Well, I'd be a bit more mature now and I'd probably go, we go to the corner once in this, and if it isn't working, we'd enough possession. But I thought, again... They were far superior in the first certainly 20 minutes to 30 minutes South Africa, that they could have been a lot further ahead. However, the other bit to that is, we've said about their dominance, their resilience, it's actually really hard to be a team that's being chased. So the fact that they stood fair, and they probably the toughest defence of the tournament, like, they've been exceptional.
I think Quagga Smith had the most turnovers in the competition, I think.
And sure, he came off the bench.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, so you've such confidence in the depth of your squad, and I think we will go on to Ireland, obviously, and I think that's been one of the positives come out of this tournament for us, especially, is that we now can look forward with huge, I suppose, relief in the fact that we've a lot of depth built, we've a lot of good players now blooded, and you would hope that in 4 years' time we can, if we build on this and what Andy Farrell has done, and obviously he's been coached here, rightly so, and well deserved. Like, if we think of his first 2 years tenure, we're like, Jesus Christ, this lad is, what's he doing here now after getting, you know? And yet, I wouldn't change him, because I just see a happy group of players that are so confident and so much, are showing so much enjoyment in their rugby. It's actually lovely. It's so, you just love, I love watching them for that. They just love each other. And to be in that environment, like me and Alison would have been, and I'm sure yourself, when in your own sport, when you're in a team that you're so close to, it's so much more enjoyable. And you do have an extra edge where you want to fight for that person, or it means a lot more. And it's hard to build. You don't always find it, you know. But yeah, I just think, I found it fascinating. I found it a great game. And I know we'd been there. And if you're a player, you don't care if you get over the line by scoring just 3 points. If it's a win, it's, you know, you have to balance what is the success for you as a team over 4 years and what is a product that you have sold out, million, you know, worth billions probably at this stage, as a product, and something we love to watch as spectators. So it's a happy balance, but I thought it gave everything, to be honest.
Before we move on to Ireland, just to finish on South Africa and the Irish interest in South Africa, Felix Jones, he has 2 World Cup medals in his pocket now, 36 years old. Such an achievement.
Oh, wow. Like, and I think even when he was playing, the guys would have said that he was like kind of like a coach on the pitch nearly. And I just think it's amazing. Like, he's 36. That's so young. Like, you know, 36, you could still be playing. I know he was forced to retire with injury, but... amazing. And I think there was another Irish guy as well, wasn't it?
Paddy Sullivan. He's the stats guy.
So, like, that's 2 Kerry. Irish guys now that have done really well.
And a lot of other Irish interests as well, with the Munster players and everything.
Yeah, which is interesting. Yeah, like, you know, that they're champions. But look, it's an interesting angle, and maybe we should try and entice them home to...
Well,
to work with some of her.
Jack Nienaber will be coming to Leinster now. Will the backs be... shaking, thinking he's coming out, going to use 7-1 splits and all that.
Like, it's something I was thinking about. If you were probably not a starter in South Africa, it wouldn't be very nice coming up to game day going, oh, unless I'm starting, I'm probably maybe not going to feature. And that's kind of an interesting way of looking at it. There's loads of arguments for and against it. But like, you wouldn't like to be a back that you're not definitely going to start, because mm-hmm. then, you know, you're not getting any involvement. So it's an interesting one. I don't know. I don't think it's a different team and we've different strengths. So hopefully it's not going to be the
angle. Well, I think we might be missing the point here, because I watched Manny Libbock after in the post-match when they were singing Razzie, Razzie, yeah. which was phenomenal. And he's about 3 or 4 people from him. So if you're really in a huff and you're pissed off at someone, I'm telling you now, I wouldn't be sitting beside my coach singing along when I'm having a beer. So the fact that he can balance people and a buy-in and they're happy enough not to, because the greater gift is the team.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's a gift in itself. So I don't see Leinster shaking their boots. I know Greg O'Shea was, when Jack as Nina Barr was down with Munster, he told a story about the person he is and what he brought.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to see that in Leinster, because I think Stuart Lancaster...
He's talked about him as well, that he doesn't talk to you just about, like, you know, that you're... I suppose you're more than just a rugby player.
That he speaks to him as a person. And
I actually think of the best coaches I had, when I look back, really the ones that you really love to this day and go, Jesus, they were great, they got the best out of me, were like that. It's like a teacher walks into a classroom and you're doing this. The ones that kind of show a little bit of interest, and you're not just a person, you're not just like a student or a player, you're more than that to them. You're a whole person, you've got other things going on. And I think they actually talked about in South Africa how, like, similar to Ireland, there was 15 kids running around the hotel, the South African hotel, at all times.
Very holistic
family approach, which, like, if you want to keep your players happy while you're at a tournament, what makes them happy? Their families and their friends and their kids and stuff. So I know Ireland had similar approach in that sense as well. So, look, it's interesting.
Well, how essential was Gally not only to you, but to all of us when you were playing, which is Alison's husband. Like, he was fantastic at all games, and he used to be a hooker. You wouldn't know by looking at him now these
skinny,
days.
Skinny cyclist / Ironman person now.
But it's... You can see why they're having family in, because it takes, well, now that you've, you know, we've both kids, it takes an awful lot of pressure off. And then when you're having a bad day, the kids kind of dilute that. You kind of forget about that, you know, yourself, you know.
And it kind of strips it back to what's really important. Like, yes, you're at World Cup and you're trying to perform, but it's only a game. And like, if you like, say, I suppose South Africa lost to Ireland, they're probably down after that, their kids are around, they're like, okay, it's just a game, we're still in it, we're not out, you know, a bit of relevance to the situation. Like.
Yeah.
And I think the thing about South Africa is, and we were speaking about this last week on the show, they know their why, and it's much bigger than rugby, and they're playing for their nation, and it has such a bigger significance for them.
Well, I was there recently enough with the Barbarians, and we played the Box Women. We played in that Lone Stadium. It's a stunning country. It was my first time there. I can't tell you how much the people are absolutely, they're just so lovely. They're so warm. They're so caring. Mm-hmm. But one thing they are absolutely mad about is their rugby. I happened to be there when the weekend that Ireland played, which was lovely. And we're in the hotel room, we're in the team room. Like, there was 8 different nationalities. So we made a pact with the Welsh. We were like, we'll be up for yous tomorrow against Australia. You help us. But we went to Robben Island the next day, and, like, you know, they were like, oh, who saw the game and who's Irish? And I gleefully put the hand up, you know, but they were humble, but they were competitive. And I don't know whether you've seen the social media, just in, you know, shopping centres and everyone coming together for just this one common, I suppose, interest. And it is rugby. And I think for them and the South Africans, there is hugely a much deeper meaning, and it's on a personal level. The fact that Khaleesi spoke about Jacques Niedermayer since he was 17, he's had him and a lot more. Etzebeth, Peter Seftetoit, like a whole horde of them. I thought Felix Jones spoke excellently after. He was ridiculously humble. He gave such credit to Axel, to Nina Barr, to actually a lot of coaches who helped him along the way and helped his path to coaching. So I think he probably diluted the credit he should have got. But I mean, at 36 to have 2 World Cup medals and not as a player is
and
a huge
England
transition.
Now have him.
Yeah. And I think that's a missed opportunity for us because, look, England were always going to be on the back foot considering Steve Borthwick only got them, Jesus, within, what, 9 months. And to have a turnaround, and grand, we can say they've got on a kind
kind of side.
Kind of sign to draw. And that is true. It wasn't, they didn't play the they didn't play a great brand of rugby. I think a lot of the punditry has said that, you know, they need to find their identity now. The game has moved on ridiculously. They're not really there. So it'll be interesting to see, because I think they will be the team now that they have gotten through this, but they'll probably call a lot of experienced players now with Courtney Laws and Ben Young's return. But I think it's opportunity. Same with New Zealand. I mean, if we look at Retallick, Aaron Smith and Sam Whitlock, Wylock, that's 300 plus caps gone from New Zealand. But I think it's an opportunity now to blood some really good players.
Now's the time to do it.
Yeah. And Scott Robertson coming in as well.
Oh, yeah.
Looking back on Ireland a few weeks on, Alison, how do you reflect on our tournament?
Like, a lot of kind of talk out there. Oh, they only got to the quarterfinal like 2015 and 2019, completely different context. We got absolutely hammered out the park 2019. 2015, we just were not in that game against Argentina and looked vulnerable in the game. Probably could have lost by a little bit more. And we've gone to, like, you know, if Ireland had have won that quarterfinal, I could see us in the final winning. Like, it's just, so, like, since 2019, we've improved the way we play. We've have more depth. The only thing I would say is, like, in that quarterfinal, Jimmy O'Brien was amazing. Like, when we were going through those phases at the end, I was like, get to him. He looks the most dangerous. Yeah. And he hasn't played at all.
Yeah.
So what I'm thinking is, you see Ireland, this is no disrespect to Romania, but, you know, they're going to struggle against us. Razzy Erasmus talked about teams not rotating, where they kind of, he said, we put out a strong team, middling team, strong team, middling. Well, we didn't do that. And I kind of thought, I feel we have the depth now that we could have went, given guys, you know, game time against Romania, game time against Tonga. Because I know there's the argument, I was talking to Sean O'Brien down in Tullow, we were doing a thing one night, and he's like, no, you need to get playing to get into that groove. Yeah, I don't know, because so tiring, so attritional, and it's also the mental energy getting up for a game.
Did he argue against you?
Just a different opinion that, you know, you have to be getting kind of like a fine oil thing, that you're getting ready for each game, you're getting ready. I'd argue, what are you learning against Romania?
Yeah,
like, to be honest, you probably, no disrespect, I actually thought some of their players were very good, you know, but I would think we were probably slightly tired going into that quarter final. And I just think it's the only thing, I love Andy Farrell, I love what he's done with the team, but I just think our players are good enough. You saw Jimmy O'Brien hadn't got, like, you could be like, oh God, I hope he's ready to go. He was brilliant. Like, so if he's not good enough for, like, I don't understand, if he's not good enough for your pool games against, how is he suddenly good enough then for the quarterfinals? So that is my only criticism. I think we could have preserved a little bit of energy.
Do you think we could have made changes in that game? Because I do agree with you. I think,
do we have the depth, but we just didn't utilise it?
I probably agree with the point. See, that I do agree with Sean's argument as well.
And
we've been there.
Because I want to play, but in the 2014 World Cup, we had, obviously, USA, so a really tight game. Then we had New Zealand, really, like, hard game, right? And then we had Kazakhstan. And I was like, you're not playing this. You're going to be rested.
Yeah.
And, like, I look back, I needed rest. Another part of me, I could have scored 3 or 4 tries that the other wingers did. But I got my rest, got right again. I was nice and energetic for, you know, the semi-final, which we got badly beaten in. But I felt physically, I was on the bench. I was told, look, you're not coming on unless, like, there's some
injury or something.
I didn't, and I got my rest. So, and look, you wonder, do you get physically, psychologically ready going against a team? I said, no disrespect against Romania. Like, I mean, do you? Like, I don't think, if we were playing the equivalent in a World Cup, that I'd be that, like, yes, okay, I get Tonga, good team. I get that, like, you know, but I just think we probably could have, you know, rotated a little bit more, saved a bit of energy. And, like, I heard someone going, I don't think Ireland have they'll run out of steam. And then because we did run out of steam, in a sense that, because it's actually, you notice the mental and emotional energy that goes into getting ready for a game. It doesn't matter who you're playing.
Yeah. Well, I wondered myself, being there with Johnny, say, was that weighing on him? Because he didn't look his lively self when he's taking the ball on, and there was queries of him being injured. Now, look, this is not a criticism. This,
no, not at
the
all.
The man has had a career that probably isn't rivaled by anybody, do you know? And he deserves every accolade and credit, and I think he's been amazing, and I thank him for the memories, because, you know, he will be missed. I certainly will miss him. And I love playing with a 10. You know, you'd often be envious of being a forward playing with that 10 who actually is always moving and putting, how he puts players in the game line.
Well,
he's unbelievable. Yeah. He's one of a kind. But to me, on reflection of that game against New Zealand, he wasn't his usually lively self, where he's taking the ball on the run and he's directing people. He looked a bit, and I was like, right, he's either injured or he's tired. Caelan Doris, the same thing. Everyone looked a bit lackluster. Yeah. Peter O'Mahony had been involved in every game, and I'm like, where was he? So,
and it's a hard one for a coach, because I'm sure I would have been there going, oh God.
But it'll be looking at lessons learned now.
Like, I think if we'd rotate a little bit more, maybe we don't get to that same situation there and then. They're a little bit more rested. I don't know. That's a very simplistic way to look at it.
And I suppose looking at our approach to this tournament as well, both finalists had lost in the pool stages, but they weren't rattled. They kept their confidence. They still had belief. So maybe there are a few learnings there as well for us, that we don't have to put everything into the pool games.
No, because, I mean, we were like, we scored, 80 odd points in the first game. Like, it was ridiculous. It was a new record we put on team, like, scored in the World Cup. So, I do agree. And, like, my last points here are not criticism. It's kind of on reflection going, we were just there or thereabouts, and yet we were probably only simmering at 60% of what we know we're capable of.
And like, that's the difference now, isn't it, between like 2019, absolutely hammered, we are not playing a nice style of rugby, like we weren't, like we were only crying for him to offload the ball or give the ball on, you know, when we have a line break and we've got numbers, and like we're playing this lovely style of rugby, we only lose New Zealand by 4 points. And I didn't think we were at our best. And that's the real, like, and I'm sure the players feel that as well. Yeah. You know, you're so close without being, we still could have won. Like, you know, if you get the ball down, you know, these different things. And that's like, we're so good without being at our best.
Playing a lovely style of rugby, that doesn't seem to bother South Africa. They play winning rugby. So looking back on what they do and what teams like New Zealand do, in knockout games, teams with all this experience at the World Cups, they know how to grind out a win, and they're happy to take those points and keep the scoreboard tipping over. Do we need to look at how we approach these knockout games?
Yes, because I'll tell you what, pressure changes how the brain works and how you make decisions. And I'm testament to that. Like, as I tell you, like, I'd be crazy, and I'm kind of the emotional side of it. If you're even in any type of leader category or what type of player I am, Lindsay was emotional. As I've gotten older, when actually the brain slows down, you're kind of like, oh, I can actually make decisions that people might say, oh, she's not headless. So say even the Kelleher, we won't even name a player, the opportunity missed off the mall where we got held up, right? I've been there where I've broken off them all, and I'll never forget Paula Fitzcomb, don't you ever break off them all. And I understand why, because she's so experienced, because as a maul, basically that's a line of defence guiding you, whoever's holding the ball, to get you literally over the line that no one can tackle you. But we decided to come off. We needed patience there. So what does pressure do? It decides, we need to score. We need to score. I need to come off this maul because it's my responsibility. I have the ball. Oh, here's an opportunity. No, those opportunities were so few and far between. The decisions have to be the right ones at the right time, because you may not get that opportunity again. So again, it's no one's fault with that maul. I've been there. I hold up my hand going, I feel so sorry for us, because if you had a maybe stayed in, or Conor Murray taking the ball and got it out, whatever was the best decision at that time, literally you could have fallen over the line. No one could have tackled you. We're back in a game, and now we're talking about Ireland being in the semi-final.
But you were saying, do we need to change? Like, teams will have, you'll actually, South Africa have their style, you know, New Zealand have their style, Ireland have their style. And I think you play to your strengths too. So I don't want to see Ireland go and play the way South Africa.
I suppose it's a mentality thing though, that we don't have to always, you know, go to the corner, that we can say, for example, in those opening stages against New Zealand, we went to the corner and it didn't work out for us, should we, I know, and again, it's hindsight, have taken those points, that maybe when it comes to those knockout games, that we play knockout rugby.
And like, I suppose everyone's like, and all the players are like, oh, the quarterfinal thing isn't on our mind. Of course it's on your fucking language. But like, of course, even as much as you say it's not on your mind, it has to be somewhere on your mind that you've never done it. So I think once we get out past that quarterfinal stage and we do that, I think our shackles will be a little bit off. Yeah. I think that still, I think, had a little bit of an effect on you, and knowing how to win and knowing how to win these games that you need to win.
But I'm going
to
challenge you, Miss Miller.
Go on, yeah.
You watched France, New Zealand.
Yes.
So what did France do in the first 60 minutes?
Can't even remember the game anymore.
Ramos took every three points he could. Yeah. And even at a point where they were so superior and he didn't kick to the corner, he took the points. Yeah, now he missed that one badly because it was so on the right-hand side of the pitch facing up, and he's a right-foot kicker. Yes. I was like, all right, you're confident.
Yeah.
But I noticed that France, and I was like, this is not a French style of playing.
No, and like,
they don't. They normally keep the ball in hand. They normally kick to touch. They normally will their line out.
And it's funny because I think if we look back at Six Nations and stuff, we would have kicked. And I suppose maybe in the game, you're getting a feeling for what you should do. And maybe you're feeling it. And like, I suppose you got to back the players to do what they feel. I think, ultimately, like, you know.
What happens when you're chasing the game, when you're
because you fall into a mindset, don't you? Oh, we need to like score tries, or else maybe the more practical thinker will be like, let's chip away.
Yeah, but my point is, if we had a maybe, and this being devil's advocate, listen, we'll always have a pitch map, you always have a game plan going into this, so that you have to stick. That's your job as a player in a team. You stick together in their decisions you make. But I'm kind of saying, right, well, I was surprised at how France handled them. And then you can look at it, you're talking about knockout rugby, and you're like, right, if we keep chipping away the 3 points, and then New Zealand are trying to force their way back into a game, then again indisciplined, then we're getting more penalties against us. Now we're getting the rub the green. Now Wayne Barnes are looking at us. And, you know, so little things impact those big decisions. And that's what we mean by knockout rugby. We're not here to pick apart Ireland. I'm so proud of the lads.
And I'm excited about, because the difference, someone said, they're the same as 2019. No, they're not. Like, as in, we were brilliant, like, and we lost to the finalists, and we could have. And Mike, I was on the radio with Mike Ross one day, and Mike Ross, he said, we're either going to lose in the quarterfinal or we're going to win. And you could see that, like, after the results, you go, we were that good. We were better than other semi-finalists, end of. Like, you know what I mean? And that's just the way the game has gone. Played some brilliant rugby.
Yeah, but countries chased us. And we have to remember that.
And we were going in.
We've been the standard bearers for 2 years. And let's not devalue
that.
Let's
tough.
Undermine that. We've been world number one. The lads have played exceptionally. They brought such joy to us as a nation. Yeah. And that's just the championship rugby. That's just,
I think the difference is, like, 2019, right? I didn't believe we were going to go past quarterfinal. We'd all this talk about, we'd won, you know, best team 2018, but I didn't feel it. Like, I didn't believe that we were going to do it. And did we do it? No. We're like, I actually believed we were going to win the World Cup this time. So there's a big difference between believing and being fallen so short of your beliefs, and believing and just missing. And that's
and
harder
just
now.
Just being beaten by the better team on the day, like, which New Zealand.
And giving credit to the other teams sometimes.
Exactly.
You know?
As I said, I don't think we've anything to be ashamed for, or think that things are doing better. I absolutely hope the lads have enjoyed the last 2 weeks. They've just bring the, and this is the thing, it's kind of flat now because we've no World Cup.
And like, I'm working as a secondary school teacher, and I'm in a school where we probably have 3 boys playing rugby and we have 1 girl in a 500. It's all soccer, it's all GA. And like, this is the impact it had. So during the World Cup, like, they're like, Miss, why is there no, we had girls tag last year, we had no boys rugby at all. They're like, why do we have no boys team? And we want to play. This is during the World Cup. And I'm like, right, trains on Friday, you have to turn up, you have to get numbers. And like, there were 17 training, I think the weekend before Ireland's quarterfinal, in the rain. So like, it has a wider impact in an area, in a community. Now, at Thai, where I work, is like, there is obviously, you've got rugby players coming out there. But in my school, it's not the sport. So there you have this. They're now, they want to play, and they're playing, and they've joined the team, and like, that's what you're looking to do. And exactly. I think that's what Johnny said they were looking to do. And that's,
we may have lost, but we won.
But like, and like, 17, to grow the game.
And these are guys now that are never played and could be very good, have the athleticism to do it. So that's impact.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely. Well, we move on now to the, I suppose, the awards. The best player. We'll start off by that, by with that award, and it'll be difficult to pick these.
Oh, I can't.
But Lindsay, who was
overall for the tournament?
Overall for the tournament, who stands out for you as best player and why?
Well, I think he deserved his World Player of the Year. I'm going to stick with Ardie Sevilla. I know it's, I think he's just given everything. Do you know, he, even the way he spoke to referees, how he led, how he spoke about his teammates after the game. New Zealand came into this tournament as absolute complete underdogs. And the fact that he continued his form from even pre-World Cup into this World Cup, I certainly thought he was a standout. And even his try against Ireland, even though he didn't want to see it, like he just... Mm-hmm. You see something different from all the time. If it's not turnovers, it's carries, it's little offloads, it's, you know, diving over the line like he's a winger and thinks he's Mac Hansen. So it's little things like that. But he's been a joy personally for me to watch. I did enjoy seeing the likes of Tonga and Charles Piatau being back in his Tongan jersey. And I thought the likes of Fiji gave us, you know, some players there.
Yeah,
they gave us hope.
I thought, like, I think it won't be very long till we see Fiji or a Tonga doing damage in a World Cup and doing things, because I think they've got the players and they're learning how to play, like, you know, they're learning to take their points and stuff rather than just playing really great rugby, which they do. But that's what I'm looking forward to now in the next 4 to 8 years, you know.
What about you?
I actually find it really hard to think. I'm like looking at someone like Etzebeth and I'm like, he was good in parts and then this one let him down. I found it really hard. I think, like, for Ireland, I've given it to Bundy, because there's no question about that.
Well, he was excellent.
I think if Ireland, I think to me, if we'd gone on a match or two, I'd give it to him of the player. But I can't give it to him just because we only got to the quarterfinal. I was coming up here going, I'm not really decided, like, but I would probably have to agree with Lindsay.
Rishi Moonga as well, I thought was good.
But Ardie probably to me would be. But I found it really hard because I look at all the players I was going through and I was like, okay, they were very good in some games, not good in others. And I had a kind of a list, but no one really stood out to me. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes maybe there isn't a player of the tournament because players have different strengths in different games. And like, to me, like, you know, what do I think? And that's the thing about rugby. Someone will pick like a flashy winger and go, they were brilliant. Someone will be looking... Like my husband, like the hooker, he's looking at the tight of the scrum and something that's... And like, the game doesn't work without each other. So I just didn't think there was a huge standout for me. But if I have to pick Ardie.
And would you agree with Bundy as the Irish player of the tournament?
Absolutely. I don't think I've seen Bundy as fit, as hungry. I actually had a few moments where I was like, geez, he's quick.
Yeah,
he's quick today.
So quick.
And when you think back to the start of the year, he wasn't even being picked for Connacht.
Something going on there. I'm not sure.
I feel there was something going on behind
definitely.
The scenes there, and that just
But he
happens.
Put a lot of work into his fitness, though.
He got his red card when they were down in South Africa with his tackle on the Stormers winger. I can't remember. And deservedly so. Listen, he was doing it at the time, and he was last gasp trying to clear out a ruck. And I think he used his time well in those eight-match ban, I think, or an eight-week ban, and he used that time wisely.
Yeah.
I've never seen him look as fit, as hungry. He's got a contract extension, deservedly so.
It's
and
brilliant
I hope,
for Connacht. Yeah.
I hope he uses that time now to just push on and carry the form in and continue on because he is an absolute joy to watch.
He's in the form of his life.
He has everything. It's the lines he runs. He's capable of making line breaks himself. He's a good distributor. He's physical. He's kind of like your complete centre when you look at a centre.
Yeah.
Like, so you can think of centre, oh, he's a really good carrier. Oh, a really good distributor. Oh, he's a good line runner. He's all of the above. And I always, to be honest, I've always rated Bundy and I would have always had him in there. And I think it's great that...
But he'd frustrate you because you know how he's capable.
I think the discipline thing maybe... you know, kind of went against him. And I think he cleaned up that and realised, okay, maybe this is something that's holding me back. If I'm in contention to start with someone and I'm in the coach's eyes equally as good, maybe the discipline thing, you know, pulls me back a little bit. So he worked on that, fair play to him, you know, and that's a huge thing. And I'd love to see him now carrying that form into Connacht, Mac Hansen and these guys, because we need all our problems to be competitive for the sake of our Irish, you know,
Absolutely.
Squads in the future and stuff like that.
Performance of the tournament, and we're looking at team performance here as opposed to individual performance.
I'm going to pick Portugal before you. I knew you were. So I was like, get in there quick. I just love the way they played. Sorry, Lindsay.
We'll come back to you.
I could read your mind. Because I'm thinking that.
What game, if you could read my mind?
Well, like all through the game, but I think they're wingers. Oh my God. Like when I look at wingers, the way I want wingers to play, I'm like explosive, fast, like they're hooker. And I'm thinking now, like, someone, come on, give them a few autumn internationals. England, give them an autumn. Ireland, like, Scotland, give them games. And there was talk from Ireland trained against them in Portugal, and there was word got back that, you know, Portugal gave them problems. People are like, oh, how, like? But you look when they play, they play such a beautiful style of rugby. And I think they don't get to play against the best. And I just thought, like, you know, like, you're watching that game, the last game. Who were they even playing? I can't even remember. Who were they playing?
Australia?
No. They actually should have beaten Australia, but
Fiji, wasn't it? Because Fiji went through even though Portugal won. Yes, wasn't it? So you're looking at them going, and you're kind of like, this is a bit of a nothing game. Like, you're sitting down, and I was like, I'm going to invest my 80 minutes in this. And then I'm like, oh, thank God I did. It was so good to watch. They're so good. And like, the thing about rugby is we need the we need these teams to be competitive. But at the same time, we need to give them a leg up as well. So when you love to see them coming to the Aviva and now playing Autumn International.
Like. Well, the only thing that let them down against Australia was the physicality. Yeah. So when Australia like brought it down to set piece and kept the ball in hand and like mauled them over, that was actually the only thing that let them down. I watched that game. I actually had tears in my eyes when they beat Fiji. Yeah. I thought it was sublime. Their first time in a World Cup, they made history and their first win. And I think they were one of my standout teams. Mm-hmm. I think Fiji as well, to be honest. Yeah. I thought some of their side, now they're frustrating as hell. So they're kind of like someone you love to hate. I'm like, Jesus Christ. Like, but at times they were brilliant in how raw they play the game. And that brings that flip side, you know. I also think the tier two, tier three, that was a tongue twister, didn't get the rub of the green at times. Like Fiji probably should have beaten Wales. Yeah. Didn't get the refereeing decisions. And look, we're not here to state referees, but
I'm saying they're probably too nice, the Fijians. You know, like the way they talk to the referee, and you have to be nice. But like, if you look at the other captains, they're not speaking. Like they're kind of, I thought they were accepting too much against Wales and not questioning it through their captain. And I think that kind of went against them because they're such nice guys. Like they're just, that's their style of people. And I think they're going to be a force in 4 to 8 years if they can get the nuts and bolts of the game and iron those out, because they've got players that beat you one on one. Like,
yeah. But we look at Boatia, he's playing. For La Rochelle week in week out, and you're like, he's on the world stage, and then you see him for Fiji, and he does the exact same thing. You just like to give. Probably we need clubs to take more chances on those countries to get them in.
The tournament is going to expand from 20 to 24 teams in 4 years' time. Is 4 years enough to develop these teams and help them grow to reach a standard or that we want at this tournament? Or are we going to see a lot of one-sided games again in 4 years' time in Australia?
The 4 years isn't unachievable to bring them up to standard. However, if you look at it logically, all the tier ones are so far ahead with how much they've embedded in their game, their club system, their underage structure, so it's just a conveyor belt. So the 4 years, if you have something there to build on, won't be an issue, but it will need a lot of time, investment.
Good players,
you know, getting to big clubs, so they're getting European games. We've seen that with South Africans coming into Europe. It changes for both sides. It benefits everyone. Mm-hmm. Brian O'Driscoll obviously spoke about Southern Hemisphere teams again dominating in the World Cup. And this is a trend we need to break as Northern Hemisphere. So I think the more exposure we can get to Southern Hemispheres for our own sake as Northern Hemisphere teams to be successful, but also to bring those countries along and develop them and help them at a rate. So the 4 years won't be, it's enough time if there's something there, but if you're building from the ground up with no underage structure or anything like that, like we've seen Italy. Italy were so poor at this tournament.
Poor. They were the most frustrating team, weren't they?
Yeah, and yet their under-20s are so successful. Yeah. And they did then invest their money and have their underage teams linked to all their clubs. But then that's gone now. Those structures are gone. So, yeah, I think it's definitely a good idea to expand it. But I think we have to be realistic in making sure money, investment and support is there, because we do not want to see. I thought the tournament was good. Players got rest, but it was quite long.
Yeah. Well, they're going to shorten it is another thing they're saying.
Yeah. So maybe look at shorten it, but obviously get your seedings right. Give players the time they need. But you also don't want to kind of flog a dead horse. So let's not extend it until it's ready. And if you're going to take that chance, then let's be wise about it.
And you have to give opportunity to these teams to play the best. Because they talk about that. We're not playing the best. How do you know how to beat the best when you never play them? You know, and it's a different level.
Yeah.
And before we finish up, looking at the tournament as a whole, did it live up to the billing? Was it a successful World Cup?
Yeah, I think it was a success. Yeah, I think any, like if you look, even South Africa's journey to the final, one point, you know, 1 point victory. That's great. Like, and even if it wasn't classic rugby at times, it's exciting to watch because you're like, oh, score for score, who's going to win? And I think, I think the disappointing thing was obviously one side is very competitive, the other side isn't. And you kind of look at teams getting to a semi-final and you're like, oh God, I don't, like they, and it's not that they don't deserve it, but they just kind of got an easier route to it. So that wasn't good for the tournament at all, because you're seeing France and Ireland, two brilliant teams, out. And
out in the quarterfinals. Oh. We had our semifinals in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, actually, it was the reverse, wasn't it? Like, you know, you're looking at going, this is like the semifinals, and then the following week was nearly equal. Like, you watched New Zealand and Argentina, and you're like, oh, God, I can't watch this. Like, you know,
but then again, England could have won.
No, well, that's the only, I think.
And, like, this is the thing about England. Like, I used to have arguments with my husband, not arguments, but he's like, oh, England are so bad. And, you know, you listen to the media and the journalists writing off England, and I'm like, do you know what, no, I will never ever say that England, they're really good players, they have really good World Cup experience and World Cup history, they know how to win it, they know how to get to finals, so they will find a way. Might not be glamorous, we might not want to watch it, but they will find a way. So yes, they found a way to get further than any of us thought. And in fairness, like Bortwick said, he goes, look, let the man underestimate us. And so you'd never, ever be like, oh, they're not going to do anything. You just can't trust them, you know, because they have that World Cup experience. They have good players. They didn't play a great style of rugby, but still, like.
Yeah, but we're not here talking about writing them off. Like I did enjoy the tournament. But the thing about it is, like, I did not enjoy the games on that side of the draw.
No, I didn't either.
And I don't really care about the seedings. That's what it brought for me. That, like, whatever about the two teams, like Ireland and France going out, they still gave us a humdinger. They still gave us really good games. And there was some really good games on that side of the draw. But I absolutely was frustrated by Argentina and England in the first round. I was frustrated. The only time I enjoyed watching England was that game against
South Africa.
Yep. And they brought a bit of something, but it wasn't enjoyable to watch, but it was still as a spectacle. You didn't know what way it was going to go, but I didn't enjoy those games on that side of the draw.
No, and
that
was the issue for me. Frustrated me, because we've seen in other World Cups
terrible.
How good they can be. Yeah.
They really underperformed.
Like, when you saw
Australia really underperformed.
Yeah, like when you see Argentina attacking, like you're like, you have, I don't know what you're trying to do. You've no shape. You never was going to make a line break. For this is a team that used to play really good attacking rugby.
Yeah.
Australia, major flop, first time in their history not to make it. Like,
Eddie Jones gone now.
You know, and you're wondering.
Disarray,
and who takes over now? Because in Australia, rugby union is not the top sport. And you've got all, you know, Aussie rules.
I think they're bigger issues for them, to be honest. I don't think. Look, I think Eddie Jones was the same thing same thing as Steve Borthwick. I think he just got a team that was too short. And what do you do then?
He dropped really experienced players, so I just...
Yeah, that is. But we don't know what they were bringing on,
a
cultural piece, or, you know, what they were bringing to the team. So, you know, we can't say that. But there's always that side of the drama as well that the World Cup will bring.
That's the interesting thing.
It all feeds into what was an interesting tournament. But my only negative was just, you know, we did say about the seedings. Whatever about seedings and the easy side of the draw, it didn't gear them up for really enjoyable games. It wasn't entertaining.
Where does it rank compared to other tournaments?
I suppose it was definitely up there, because instead of you waiting for the pool stages to be over and you're going to knockout where all the exciting bit was, there was actually some cracking games in the knockout stage. And as I said, Portugal were probably the surprise package.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed watching them. And I mean, I was roaring at telly. I'd say.
And Georgia played some good rugby at times too. You know,
Georgia are really coming up.
And there's two European teams there now that we talk about, Six Nations and stuff.
There was talk about wanting Georgia in there as well.
Could you put Portugal in? I don't know. Is that a conversation that needs to be had? I don't know.
Well, a very difficult one to finish. Who will win the next Rugby World Cup? Look into your crystal ball there now, Lindsay.
Look, I'd love to say Ireland would take the 4 years if we can build on it. I think it'd be them, or I could see New Zealand now coming back with a mighty bang now to kind of claim their fourth, you know, because they won't like to be beaten. And, you know, when they've held the anomaly for so long, being the most historic team between wins and usually going in as tournament favourites and what they can produce as a nation, I think we've seen the last of them. But I'm still hopeful that Ireland can absolutely win a World Cup, especially on what they've built on in this tournament.
Alison?
It's going to go up my heart here. There's nothing to base on what's going to happen. I'm going to pick Ireland.
Yeah.
Because I think we've good depth coming through, good players, I think good interest. I think, like, where I'm from, not a traditional rugby area, you see more guys and girls going into rugby that are very athletic, and I think hopefully we'll see those come true and get a chance to play for their country and go on and perform, because I think we've brilliant athletes out in this country. I know we're a small population, but we can do anything.
That's a lovely note to finish on. What's Ireland, yours? Of course, Lindsay. Absolutely.
Right answer.
Ding, ding, ding. Yeah.
Well, that's all we have time for today. My thanks to Alison and to Lindsay. An epic World Cup has drawn to a close. We will now focus on our provinces as the URC is back in action, and we'll be back on House of Rugby next week. Until then, from all of us here, Slongafol.
Sports Joe presents House of Rugby, together with Heineken. Get the facts, be drink aware. Visit drinkaware.ie.